Dennis Engelhardt, our new Bonner County assessor. Again, thank you for being here today. And I'd like to just start with an introduction. Tell us a bit about your background, Dennis, and how long you've lived here, your family, anything you want to mention, hobbies such as archery.
Sure. Well, my wife and I purchased property back in February of 01, so 22 years ago. We moved up here as full-time residents in 19 years ago. It took about 18, 20 months to build our home up here. We have 6 children, 9 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren who are spread out across the country, literally. So we don't get the opportunity to see them frequently. One of our sons showed up last night at midnight with his family for a week's vacation, so I'm hoping the weather will accommodate their stay.
It's going to be nice. Yeah.
They love the water. They're very avid fishers, so hopefully they'll have good weather to enjoy that. Professional background, I spent 30 years in law enforcement, worked in the Sheriff's Department, retired from there as a captain. I was actually a commander for a jail facility, a large jail facility.
And where's that?
That's in Riverside, California, which is much different than it was 20 years ago when I left. But it was a large facility, about 1,200 inmates. I had 260, 270 employees and a $23 million budget. So that's where I ended my career. I retired, and then we came up here to enjoy life, as it were. As far as activities, since we've been here, probably in 06, I think it was, or 07, we started volunteering for the festival at Sandpoint, and we did that for 5 or 6 years. I think we took about a year or two breather, and then we went back and did that, and we really enjoyed working behind the stage and dealing and helping people. I've worked for 5 years as a fire commissioner for initially the Sagal and then the Selkirk Fire District. Really enjoyed that. It's no pay involved in it, but it got involved in the community, and I enjoy that. I always enjoyed that. And currently, and for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been working with the Marine Corps League. We do honor guards for servicemen who have passed in the area, regardless of the branch. And we do color guards, too, for events and things like that. So I really enjoy that.
And you are a former Marine.
I am a former Marine, yes. I joined the Marine Corps a couple months after I turned 17. Was in Vietnam a couple months after I turned 18.
Boy.
I was 69 to 72, and I just said that, and I'm thinking back, that was that was over half a century ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
But most of it's pretty clear in my mind still, so it was good. And my family has gone on to have a tradition in the Marine Corps. One of my daughters was in the Marine Corps. She met her husband in the Marine Corps. They had 2 sons who went into the Marine Corps. They just both got out of the Marine Corps. They have cousins that were in the Marine Corps. My son-in-law, another son-in-law, he's a former Marine, so quite a history. And I'm told by my parents, who have since passed, that I had an uncle I never met who died on Iwo Jima. So,
oh, really?
So a history with the Corps.
Yes.
So, let's see.
Well, hobbies, interests.
Hobbies, interest. I like hunting. Normally, I do it with a bow. Boating is nice. I do fish, and I emphasize fishing because I'm not much of a catcher for some reason.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, but I always tell my friends, when you ever out on the water, you always catch a good time, so you don't come home empty-handed.
Yeah,
so.
And that's really the prime motivation for a lot of fishermen.
It is. We have some beautiful areas up here. I have a wood shop. I like working in the wood shop, especially in the wintertime. This past winter, a neighbor and I worked all winter long, taking some wood that we harvest back in Wisconsin. It's a redwood, red oak, actually. And that was cured for about 4 years. And then I turned that into what's called a Welsh hutch. So it's it took us all winter to do it, but it's a beautiful piece of furniture. So
yeah, I imagine. So yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's precision work too, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is. It was a good thing because he's about my age too, so it was good to have him there, and we can check each other's math and calculations. Yeah. It saved us some wood.
Yeah, yeah, some time. I'm of the measure twice, cut once, yes. But it's usually measure four or five times, yeah. Cut three or four. Yeah,
it's a safer way to go.
Yeah, so. Okay, well, you did run for assessor previously. Was it 2018?
2018, or?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Well, what was your interest in the assessor position?
Well, as I mentioned, I went in the Marine Corps a few months after I was 17 years old, and I have been working basically as a public servant for a long time. I love working for the community, being part of that. And so that was part of the draw. The other part is that the assessor's office, like law enforcement, is heavily dependent on and regulated by state statute and rule of law, which is an environment that after 30 years in law enforcement, I'm very comfortable working in. And I suppose the position of assessor, and I stress this when I did run back in 18, is really an administrative position. Given my life experiences, I felt I'm, very qualified for that and comfortable in doing that. So that was the basis.
Mm-hmm. And you're appointed to this position.
I am.
So does that mean you run again in 2024? How's that work?
Yeah. Okay. It's interesting you should ask because I just had a conversation a couple days ago about that because I wasn't quite clear. The code says when you're appointed by the commissioners, you hold that position and then stand in the next general election, is what the code says. So I asked our local clerk to get a clarification for the State Department. So we sent something up and it came back. So I will run for that position in 2024. So I'll be on the November ballot I'm not quite sure if we have to do a primary or not, but. Mm-hmm. There will be an election in 2024, and then you have to turn right around and run again for the 26 for the position so that it gets back into the cycle.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So,
okay.
So, yeah. So essentially, myself or if someone else should be elected in November of 2024, it's basically a two-year appointment as opposed to the normal four-year appointment, and mm-hmm. then they would have to run again. So. Mm-hmm.
And you were appointed because your immediate predecessor had to resign because of health reasons.
Yes, and I got to tell you, Chris, I was very disappointed that occurred. I worked with Grant on his campaign. I was a supporter when I first met him. I was very intrigued by his perception of some of the major issues in the department and his plans and how to address those things. So. When I found out that he had those difficulties and had to resign, I was very sorry. I think the community has lost an opportunity in his resigning. So, mm-hmm. But hopefully I can carry on those things.
Well, new opportunity now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, how did you find that process? The central committee makes a recommendation, and then you interviewed with the county commissioners. And I got to confess, I did not follow that process very
sure.
Closely.
Well, quickly, I'll go over it. In this particular case, I hadn't even thought about being the assessor. I was busy with my life, and one day I got three separate calls from different people asking if I would be interested in allowing my name to be put into consideration. For the position. I knew the process because I worked closely with the Central Committee in years past. My wife used to be the chair of the Central Committee. So I knew the process. And basically what it is that the Central Committee of the party of the political persuasion of the person in office, the one who's leaving, takes over. In this case, it was Republican. So they put out a notice to people who are interested in that position. We turned in resumes, answered about 20 questions on a particular list, and then did an interview with the Central Committee. There were about 8 or 9, I believe, who had submitted for that. Once those interviews and everything was done, then the committee has to nominate. Someone has to nominate. Out of the 8 or 9, 5 people were nominated in second. So now the committee has to meet an executive and discuss those people. So out of those 5, they have to select 3. And those 3 people have to then go to the county commissioners, who have to make a selection from that. So I ended up being one of the 3 that were submitted to the commissioners. The 3 of us met in front of the commission in an open meeting. We had about a 2-hour interview process with the commissioners, and then they make a decision, and also in public, in a public hearing. I'm pretty sure it's recorded. History.
I'm sure it's out there.
There's
on
history
YouTube.
There, so yeah. If people are interested, yeah. they can go back and listen to the questions and the answers to those questions.
Mm-hmm. So assessor is probably a department that a lot of people aren't that acquainted with what the function of the assessor is. So describe what the position entails and what the department does. I mean, if you're a property owner, you get an assessment notice in the mail, and it.
Yeah, well, let's maybe do a broad brush first on the duties of the assessor's office. And that was, well, first would be obvious to administrate the activities of the assessor's office, and that would include what we call land records division. But you also, in the state of Idaho, the assessor is the administrator for the local Department of Motor Vehicles. Here in Bonner County, we have 2 locations. And then there's a third, much, much less known responsibility, that if the governor of the state of Idaho decides that he or she wants a militia, it falls on the assessor of the county to develop the and register the eligible persons for that draft, if you will. So it's not likely that we're going to have to deal with the governor calling up a militia. And if we did, I suspect you'd have somebody who has an expertise in a different field than me to have questions of.
Know what? I've never heard that before, yeah. that duty of the assessor. So, we don't currently have a state militia, but how's that different from the National Guard?
Quite honestly, I don't know. Mm-hmm. The National Guard is available for call up by the federal government. They can be activated by the federal government. I don't think the state militia can be.
Okay.
And it historically, the state militia, if I recall, if the National Guard is called and leaves to the state, then the governor can have a state militia as a backup mm-hmm. to that. Mm-hmm. I may be wrong. Hopefully one of your listeners will get a hold of me and correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I don't know that I've ever even... I don't believe Idaho has any kind of standing militia, or has since I've lived here.
I don't
for 40
think they
years.
Have an active, official militia.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm.
Many states do. But.
Yeah. Okay. Well, dig in some more on what the assessor's department. I mean, the main function. Although the DMV is obviously something we should talk about
too.
Yeah.
DMV actually is probably. A little more direct, and if we can address that, then that would be nice. Right now, we have 8 positions working in DMV. We have 2 locations. One is in the mall in Ponderay, and the other one's out in Priest River, and it's on East Side Road. Listeners out there probably know exactly where it is. I think the address is 75. It's co-located with other county operations out there. And if you will allow me, we do have 1 vacancy. So
sure,
I can make a plug for it. If any of your listeners are interested in working for the DMV, they can do a search for Bonner County, Idaho, job openings, and then it'll pop up. There'll be something, current job position. Just hit on that, and it'll give you all of the vacancies that the county has right now. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested, come work for us.
There you go.
That's an opportunity.
Well, it is a tight job market, actually. It's difficult to find qualified people right now.
It is. And not just here in Idaho, but around the country. But for some reason here in North Idaho, it's hard finding mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. But we mentioned DMVs, and so I'm not surprised, nor should you be, that probably the first image that comes to people's minds when you mention DMV is long lines and hours of waiting to get services. I know when I came here 20 years ago, it took me about 10 minutes to complete everything I needed to do, and I was out the door. That's obviously not the case anymore. My wife was in there just Monday. She got there 45 minutes before the doors opened up or the service began. And everybody knows who's gone there. You have to pull a number. Mm-hmm. She pulled the number. She was number 11, getting there 45 minutes early. And then it was another 45 minutes before she could get in, and her 10 minutes of business was concluded. Mm-hmm. But when she came out, typically, she said there were dozens of people, you know, waiting to be serviced. And so logical thought on the part of your listeners is, well, why is it like that, and what the heck are you going to do about it? So addressed to the why, I think it's not surprising that most people know that Bonner County has experienced tremendous growth in the last 3-4 years or so. And to give you an idea as how that has impacted the DMV, our small, which is really small DMV compared to Kootenai County, in 2021, we have basically registrations and titlings is what's done there. We don't issue license. That's another that's another division. But in 2021, these local small DMVs did 33,500 plus registrations that year, and 26,500 titlings. Now, titling, depending on what you're doing, it can take 5 minutes, it can take 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Each.
So, something gets hung up.
Right. Yeah. It can be very complicated. In 2022, there was a little bit less. We had 29,600 registrations and 26,000 titlings. So it's growing. This year, a monthly average would show us to be just a little bit under average, but we haven't hit our really heavy months yet. So I don't think it's going to slow down. We're still having people coming here. We are still having people from other counties coming up here because even though we have to draw a number and wait for hours, it's less time than they have to spend at their local DMV.
We're getting some overflow from Kootenai County.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I understand that you have to make an appointment, and appointments are 3 to 4 weeks out. And when you have to get a vehicle registered so that you can use it legally on the road, that's unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to deal with that as well. And as to what we can do about it, I've been there less than a month, but in talking to the director over there and talking to our IT people, I think probably some of the immediate approaches would be in the DMV, they have actually two monitors there. Your listeners who've been there will recognize this. Well, one is a local database or computer system. The other is state. And they have to work between those two, and they're switching back and forth constantly. And that can be time-consuming, depending on what they're processing. So I asked IT to go out there and look at it, and they're trying to develop a way where they can more smoothly transition from one to the other to try and cut down on that time. It may be only minutes, but when you add those all together for a day, hopefully, you know, we can cut down the waiting times.
Is there a security reason to have two different systems like
There's
that?
There's just actually two systems that don't talk to one another.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a big fix out there, but the state is the principal auditor of those systems. So, and I'm sure that the state DMV is working on some system that is more efficient, but it's just not there right now.
Now, you can get a lot of stuff done online as well.
You can.
Yeah.
You can.
Like renewing registrations, for instance.
You can renew that. What you can't do is get VIN verifications. Mm-hmm. And so if you're dealing with a title or the registered vehicle and it's a new vehicle, we have to verify the VIN number on the vehicle, and that can only be done physically.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting you should say that, because that's one of the things that slows down the process. And there are ways that we can eliminate some of that time, but it has to be done through education. And the community has to know that there are alternative ways of getting VIN verifications done than showing up and then having the DMV employee walk out to your vehicle and do that. You can go to local law enforcement. Many times they'll do the VIN verification. If you purchase from a dealer can do VIN verification. So when you show up, you've got that done already, which leads me to another thing of what we can do in the immediate thing. And that is sort of a pre-screening, if you will, of people come that are coming to the DMV. Now, how that looks and be done is still something we're discussing. But imagine that you show up at DMV, you're not quite sure what the process is all about, and there's somebody there with a volunteer vest on, and you go up to them, and they what are you here for? Well, I'm here to register this vehicle. Well, do you have the VIN verification? Do you have this document? Do you have that document? And they say, well, no, I'm missing this. Well, instead of standing in line for 2 hours and getting up there and being told that you got to come back at another time, why don't you go get this done and then come back another time? Another thing we talked about possibly is a kiosk of some sort where it's all touchscreen, where you can walk up and I'm here for this. You touch that, and that just leads you through a process so that you can verify whether or not that you have your documents that are necessary.
Yeah,
so those two are
pretty disappointing to wait through the line and then get up there and find out.
It is. And it's aggravating. I've been in those lines and I've seen the frustration on people's face. You know, I've been here for an hour and a half, why didn't you tell me? And it's frustrating. And I understand that. So we're going to try and address that as best we can.
Yeah. Well, that's something that everybody that drives a vehicle or has a boat is going to be happy to hear.
Yeah. So. One thing I want your listeners to know, little heads up, the state approved what they call a title administrative fee, and that takes place or begins the 1st of July. And essentially what it is the state said to the counties, you can add an administrative fee to the cost of titling a vehicle. And every county is at their discretion can determine what that fee is. Some of them are as high as $10. Here in Bonner County, we have $4 addition. So that brings up the cost of or increases the cost of titling a vehicle to about $18. That sounds like a lot of money. Bonner County only gets $7 of those $18. The rest go to the state. But I want your listeners to know that if they go to register a vehicle after the 1st of next month, it's going to cost $4 more in Bonner County.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Heads up, folks.
Yeah.
So
we can talk about the assessor's office if you want.
Yeah, that's the kind of the biggest role that this position has. So let's talk into what it is that the assessor does in terms of how you establish assessments. How big the department is?
Okay, we have 18 positions in the assessor's office, plus 3 working in the lands records division. Again, a broad brush of the office. Assessor is responsible for keeping record of property ownership changes, transfer titles, and such. Maintaining maps, boundaries. We use the GIS, which is the Geographic Informational System, I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with. We also maintain descriptions of building characteristics to help with their assessment value. And we also track properties that have exemptions like homeowners or tax property relief exemptions, things of those natures. And if you're wondering whether or not you are eligible for any of these things, just contact the office and ask. And if you are eligible, we're more than happy to provide the paperwork and some direction for you. So, and then one of the biggest things we do is analyze trends in sales prices, construction costs, and rent fees. And those all help us establish values when we go out into the field. Now, the state law requires the assessor in every county to establish values, if you will, as of January 1 of the current year. So one of the ways we do that, well, again, we're in the state of Idaho, the tax commission requires that we we inspect every property or evaluate every piece of property, but they require that we do a physical inspection once every 5 years of a piece of property. So so essentially 20% a year, we have to go out and physically visit that piece of property. In Bonner County, we have over 45,000 parcels of property to look at. So at 20%, you're looking over 11,000 pieces of property that the deputy assessors have to go out and look at physically. Now, if something outside of that 20%, some property outside of that 20% had a change, i.e. built a garage or a shop or had some physical change or had a fire and significant damage, all of those things would generate another visit because it would affect your assessment rate. So it's not just the 11 plus thousand that we have to do, but any others that might be, and including new construction too. So
do you get a heads up from building location permits that a new garage may have been built in advance of a visit like that?
We do coordinate with the building, the planning department. We don't have a building department. And we can request that information. So yes, and we do that to stay on top.
And a site visit, how long does that typically last? Just kind of a walkthrough?
It would depend on the size of the property. It may be nothing more than if it's let's say a vacant lot with a shed on it, might be just a drive-by. If it's multiple structures on the site, it may take a little bit more. Usually first-time visits take a little more time, i.e. new construction, because they have to get out and they have to measure. They take outside dimensions of buildings. So that can take a little bit longer to do. But we do not visit properties without the permission. That is, we don't go on their physical property without permission of the property owner. We don't like to do that. Matter of fact, Grant did something that I will be continuing, and is that is sending out notices to people that they're scheduled for their 5-year inspection, and we'd like permission to go out there. And surprisingly, we get more than 50% of the people are welcome to have us visit. We don't go inside of the residence or any other buildings. We'll just visit. Generally, we walk around the building in areas that would commonly be accessible by your FedEx delivery truck or somebody like that. We don't look through windows or do any of that stuff.
I actually recently got one of those letters saying that we're going to have a visit here sometime. I didn't get the actual.
Yeah,
You don't like pin down a hard date. I think you just kind of a heads up.
Right. Yeah. And some people don't want us out there, so then we have to use other methods to accomplish what the state mandates us to do.
Is that like looking at satellite photography, or how do you?
That's one avenue we can look at. Mm-hmm. So. And personally, I prefer if someone flatly denies us access to the property, that's their right. We have no constitutional right or no law in Idaho to come onto your property without your permission. But we still have a mandate by the state to do that job. And so there are other avenues open to us. And personally, I would be in favor of sending a second letter saying we haven't heard from you. Consequently, we're going to have to use A, B, C, or D to accomplish accomplish our task. Mm-hmm. So,
which might be less accurate.
Well, it could be less accurate, but I've only been there for a month or so. But the information I've heard about the technology, and probably not surprising to your listeners out there who know about satellites and drones and all that other stuff, but they can get extremely precise. One of my employees said that they looked at the system. They looked at his property. He had a tree outside of his property, and they were able to look at that tree and actually tell him to the inch how tall that tree was. So it's fairly accurate.
Yeah.
Well, fairly accurate.
In a way, that's a little scary.
Well, to me, it's a lot scary. I'd much prefer to have a personal interaction with people and go out there and have them walk the property with us, because in doing so, There may be something that the deputy appraiser sees, and it's not quite what it appears to be. Mm-hmm. For instance, this happened to me personally. The house we built had three false dormers on it, so there was a presumption on whoever came out, back in 05 or whatever, that whole upstairs was developed.
You're right, right.
So my wife and I paid taxes on 1,400 square feet for well over 10 years that we didn't even have.
Right.
So if they're out there and you have the personal interaction, the property owner could say, no, those are just false dormers. There's nothing up there, that kind of thing. It could be very helpful and makes the assessment much, much more accurate. Mm-hmm. So. And then once we got those, then assessment notices go out, and they go out on the first Monday in June. Now, everybody knows that you can make inquiries about your assessed value. You can argue, if you will, the values, but you only have until 5 o'clock on the fourth Monday of June to do that. You can come to the assessor and talk, and we've had hundreds of calls. And the vast majority of them we were able to resolve on the phone because the property owner was able to provide some information that wasn't available to us at the time. So taking that into consideration changed the assessment. Sometimes it's a short dialogue. I mean, we had one guy said, hey, you got my outside dimension wrong by 1 foot. Would you please change that? Mm-hmm. Well, yes. So we'll be happy to do that. Mm-hmm.
Let me jump in here, sure, for just a second. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the morning show on 88.5 KRFY, and our guest today is Dennis Engelhart. He is the new Bonner County Assessor, and we're talking about his background as well as the role of the assessor here in Bonner County. So continue on, please. We are talking about that, what it is you do there.
Yeah, and we're talking about the notices, and if you disagree, how you can go about inquiring about that. So if you fail to do that by 5 o'clock on the fourth Monday of June, or you disagree with the assessor after having a discussion with him, you can file an appeal, but it has to be done before that time. And then after 5 o'clock on the fourth Monday in June, the value is set unless you have a hearing in front of the Board of Equalization and they make a change to it, then we would change it. And often, and I just sat on 9 of them yesterday, and we have another 9 or 12 today, there is an adjustment right out of the gate from the assessor because they were able to get information that wasn't available to them when they made the assessment. And so they, at the beginning, make a notice to the Board of Equalizations, which is just the commissioners sitting in that capacity. Mm-hmm. And that becomes the part of the record, and another notice is sent out to them, a correction notice to the property owner. Mm-hmm. But if you appear in front of the Board of Equalizations and you still disagree, then you have the option to go to the state tax hearing board, or actually I think the court system is open to you if you wish to do it that way too.
How many people escalate it to that point?
I believe last year I met with the director of the state tax appeals board a week or so ago, and I think we had 15, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm, out of Bonner County. So
how have you found the department so far? You're only there for a month. Do you feel like you're adequately staffed? Are you planning any changes, I guess, would be the main question.
Well, answer the first question, no. And second question, yes. I would like to have and plan to ask for some additional staffing this fiscal year. One of the reasons is we have a lot of new construction, and although the code allows you, the state statute allows us to put those on within, I think, 4 or 5 years of completion as new construction, it's not getting done quick enough. So I need to put together a group that can just concentrate on that. Mm-hmm. Second, I need the the breadth and depth in the staff to help alleviate what I call the indispensable person. There are areas of assessment, both in commercial, mobile homes, multi-dwelling complexes, private property, that are skilled. I mean, it takes extra knowledge and time to be able to do those things accurately. And right now, I basically have one person that can do that. And if that person should happen to win the lottery and decide to leave, we're behind the eight ball. So I want the flexibility so I can take people from the residential section and transfer them into commercial for maybe 4 to 6 months at a time so they can develop that expertise. Ultimately, I'd like to have at least three people that have an expertise in those specialties.
Yeah, within a redundancy of skills.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We're playing a dangerous game by mm-hmm. not having that there.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we have been seeing a ton of growth. So yes. That's got to really be increasing the workload on the assessor's office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we can talk, if you've got another question, or we can talk about how we do property evaluation.
Sure. We have about 10 minutes. So okay. We just got to watch how we spend our time
okay,
here.
Sure.
But yeah, let's talk about how you do that. How you come up with those values.
Well, yeah. County assessors in the state of Idaho really have three types of property that they deal with, and that's residential, commercial, and then personal, which I mentioned earlier. Now, when you're talking in personal property, it's personal property that's used for business purposes only, equipment or shelves or whatever. And then just here recently, the state upped the exemption of that property from $100,000 to $250,000. So the first $250,000 is not even considered.
So a small business probably isn't even worth their time to,
right.
to inventory all that
correct.
Stuff. Yeah.
Correct. Correct. Now, residential, not surprisingly, that's our biggest piece of the pie right there. And the assessor's office is required to establish what they call a market value for each piece of property within the county by January 1 of the current year, as I mentioned earlier. And now that the assessor is required to do these sales information, they can only use sales information that they identify as quote unquote valid. Okay. They can't take current listings, for example, or what a piece of property was on the market for at one time, or properties that are out of the area or out of the category. So they can't do that. So we have to take properties within a certain time period, and that is from October 1 of 2 years prior to the current calendar year, current tax year, that is, and up to and through September 30th of the year just prior. So for 2023, when the assessors were out there gathering sales data, they were only looking at sales that occurred from October 1 of 2021 through September 30th of 2022. So if you had a piece of property and you got your assessment and you say, this isn't right because my neighbor just sold their property for X dollars mm-hmm. less than this, that may be factual, but we can't use that. Mm-hmm. We can next year, mm-hmm. we can use that sale as valid information material. And that's one of the things I think that causes a lot of frustration among taxpayers, that they don't understand the parameters. And that's one of the things I've talked with the management team that I'm putting together. Once we get through this appeals process, we'll start developing training and public relations outlets so that we can educate people. Mm-hmm. Who wanted to be educated mm-hmm. about how the process works.
And I actually just talked to somebody that had a similar situation. They bought a piece of property and their assessment came in for higher than they actually bought it for. And they're like, how can that be?
Yes.
And it's because it was going back to that previous period. But are we seeing real estate values continue to rise? I mean, that implies that they've dropped a little bit.
Yes, the value. Well, it depends on the market. There are some areas that it's coming down slightly, but for the most part, it's in steady increase. We still have an influx of people coming in, mm-hmm. and then some areas are really, really booming. Mm-hmm. particularly when it comes to land evaluations. I, like myself, my assessment came in, my land value went up significantly. The house stayed pretty much the same, or the improvements, excuse me, stayed pretty much the same. But land is really going up across the county. In some places, 100 plus, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Doubling.
Yes. So the market, which we call the market approach, is really the most useful way of determining residential values. But that also means that your property value is going to change from year to year because the market changes from year to year. So seeing fluctuations in there from year to year shouldn't shock people, but they should understand it's that way because the market is changing. And for the current fiscal year, if people just think back what places were selling for in 21, late 21 through 22, they could probably greater appreciate why their assessments values went up. But there are things that influence that. I mean, you can have two houses that are almost identically the same, but they're in different geographical areas, and they may have a different value. And that's because of the general location, the distance from schooling or other amenities, shopping and such like that, or surrounding properties and parks and things like that all have an influence on the price.
How automated is this process? Is there like an algorithm that'll you can apply to get a general sense or general number?
There are many.
Yeah, I imagine.
Because
you deal with thousands of properties every year.
I said, that we have over 45,000 pieces of property. So that's why they do mass appraisals. They're called mass appraisals. So outside of that 20% we talked about earlier, we develop this data, and we use take a particular area, and they come up with a ratio, and they apply that ratio to that area to increase the increase or decrease the values. I think this, and I don't know if I mentioned this, but if not, it's worth repeating to your listeners that the assessor does not set a quote unquote sale value of your home. What we're trying to do is establish estimates of what a typical, or what they call an arm's length buyer, would pay for your particular property as of January 1 of the current year. So,
So that's a great run through on how you're establishing these values. And you did describe the complaint resolution process. What are the biggest complaints you hear? I imagine it's that this assessment's off, but I might be wrong on that.
No, that's it. Well, how can my property I bought? Well, you mentioned I paid X dollars for my property. How could it be worth $100,000 more? Mm-hmm. Or my neighbor has the same acreage, the same square footage, but their value is X less or X more than mine. Why is that? Because when they come in and they do a general evaluation, probably a good way to describe it is to say, let's say you and I own separate pieces of property in one of these zones or regions that we use, okay? And along with that, there are probably maybe 12 other pieces of property. So we have 14 pieces of property. When we go in there to evaluate pieces of property, we look at sales data for that particular area. We have to go to the MLS, the multiple listings, and that's where we get our information. We do not have access to all of the information in there that's in there. We only have access to that information that people who sold or purchased property agreed to allow that information to be public.
And not everybody does.
And not everybody does. And again, I'm told it's roughly around 50%. So let's say we go in and we're going to assess the value of the property in that area. They'll glean maybe four sales out of the 12 or 14 pieces of property, and they'll use that data. Then they'll take each one of those properties individually, And they'll try and establish, or they will establish, what they call a appraisal to sale ratio. They take what the property was appraised for, what it actually sold for. They do some division. They come up with a percentage. Then they take each of those four percentages, add those together, divide it by four, and they come up with a percentage. And it's that percentage by which all of the properties in that particular area are either increased or decreased in value. Mm-hmm. Now, if there were more disclosures, let's say that there were seven properties that sold, well, that's more data that we have readily available to us. So it's going to impact that value. So it may reduce mm-hmm. everybody's because of the values. It may stay the same. And then if the market is up everywhere, mm-hmm. then it's going to, of course, increase it. Mm-hmm. So, but it is, I don't want to get into assessed value versus how much tax you pay. That's a different program, but and outside of my.
Yeah, you don't actually set that.
No,
tax
we
rate.
Have.
So
we
just
have
just so people understand that.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're setting the value as determining the value of the property, but
yeah,
the tax rate.
To be clear, the assessor has absolutely nothing to do with this establishing your actual tax mm-hmm. Rate mm-hmm. or dollar.
Well, we do have just a couple minutes. Again, if you just tuned in, we're talking with Dennis Engelhardt, the new Bonner County assessor. Dennis, what are anything else, any other things you'd like to let folks know about?
They're probably interested to know why or how the state comes up with the ratios and the directives that they give to the counties to use and how your taxing districts here in Bonner County get the percentages that they can use. And what happens is that once we gather all of our data, that is put in rolls, they call them, and then we make sure that that data is as correct as we can make it. That goes to the state, who then looks at it, validates it, and then after that, then they will send out a notices to the county and the taxing districts as to what they can use. One of the things listeners should probably know too is that we are under a directive, or actually law, by the state. We have to come in at 90%, between 90% and 110% of values. Mm. So if we submit properties or a roll that's at 85%, the state is not going to be happy about that. They're going to come down. They're going to want to know why. So that's, for our purposes, that's what we target mm-hmm. for.
You might be too new on the job to know this, but how closely does the state watch that? Do they have people checking over each of the counties?
Each area has a member of the state board that is available all the time for questions and advice, and so they keep a very close handle on it.
Mm-hmm. What department of the state does that?
That's State Tax Commission.
The Tax Commission. Okay.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else, Dennis Engelhardt, you want folks to hear?
No, I think that's it. If you do have questions, and I want to encourage people again, if you have issues with your assessment when it comes out, give us a call. I mean, just a few minutes of discussion about it may make a difference. Mm-hmm. We can't consider what we don't know. And like I said, we do not always have access to sales in your property. The example I gave earlier of four known sales and then three unknown sales pop up. Well, adding those three unknown sales information to us may change your assessment. So communicate with us. We're here to help you. If you think that you are entitled to an exemption or you're not sure what those exemptions might be, come in and talk with us. Mm-hmm. We're here to help you.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dennis Engelhardt, Bonner County Assessor, I want to say thanks for coming in. Now, if you have a lot of information on the website.
Our website is very poor.
Upfront, okay.
Our website is very poor. That's one of the things that we're going to be working on.
Okay.
It should be much more interactive. There should be much more information on there. A number of the things that we discussed here today should be answered on there. And be patient. We're working on it. I've already identified staff who will be assisting on developing that and talking with IT on that. Mm-hmm. So,
but your contact information is there. So
the contact information is there. Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, Dennis Engelhardt, thanks again for coming in to talk with us. It's actually pretty fascinating, the whole role that you're playing there. And, you know, the thing is, we are seeing a lot of growth. There are market forces that are driving things right now that's creating a lot of the stress for people.
Yes. And
that's kind of beyond the control of anybody in government, even.
Yeah, we're in this together. Remember, all of us pay property taxes, too.
All right. Well, Dennis Engelhardt, thanks a lot for coming in to speak with us.